that those, so that's not a factor in those.
Well, I mean, okay. Like, if there's 6 hours, and
that's six things. You don't.
Yeah.
You've used it over the years, though, right?
Like, yes. Doing all sorts yes, of stuff. Yes, yeah. I do a lot.
We've been fortunate.
Yeah. How much do you have left of it? What do you got to use by
not
July
much.
1st?
Well, actually, I do have a little bit.
You might have
this
one. Transfer.
Now, so how do you feel?
Gone
in. I think so. If yeah, it's 3:30.
I do. Thank
you. Got it.
I call to order this subcommittee meeting of the Arlington River Speed Zone Subcommittee, the Jacksonville Waterways Commission. My name is Rick Hartley, and I'm a commissioner of the waterways. I'd like to go around the table and have everyone introduce themselves.
The Mayor's Office of General Counsel.
Brian Burkett, Waterways Project Manager.
Jim Suber, Waterways Coordinator.
Adam Hoyles with the Environmental Protection Board.
Andrew Frayden, Waterways Commission.
Nick Holland, City Council at Large, Group 3.
And good afternoon, everyone. Joyce Morgan, City Council, District 1.
Is that on?
I think so.
Is it? Okay. Anyway, thank you for coming. This is an important meeting, and I hope we can make progress on this issue. First up is a presentation about the need for a speed zone. I've done some research, and I'm sure all of you have. We're concerned about safety on the waterways. Chief among that was an accident that occurred on August 22nd, where someone riding on an inner tube being pulled by a jet ski was slammed into one of the pilings of the bridge and required them to have surgery and 8 screws and a plate put in their arm. And we're concerned about speed in this congested portion of the Arlington River. At this point, I'd like to suggest that our chairman of the committee, of the commission, Councilman Hoagland, take the floor and run the rest of the meeting.
All right. Well, thank you, Commissioner Hartley. Really appreciate you chairing the subcommittee. I don't know if we have any presentations from staff that we want to start with. No? Okay. Staff, you can weigh in anytime you want, Brian or Captain Suber or Rita. The reason we're here today is because last year in the summer, there was proposed a bill that would have set speed restrictions around the Cessory Bridge and the University Bridge on Arlington River. And not only that, but because there was plus or minus 300 feet on either side of those bridges, they're created in there a little open space, and the contemplated legislation proposed that that open space be also subject to the speed restriction, resulting in a speed restriction as you come from upriver in Arlington River, starting at 300 feet to Cessory, cruising down west to southwest, going under University, and then 300 feet beyond to the University Bridge. So that generated some consternation, and it was a bill that was proposed or introduced, I think, by Councilman Alfararo. And there ended up being a public meeting at a church in Arlington to discuss the issue. And during that discussion, there was considerable sentiment for the speed restriction, and there was considerable sentiment against the speed restriction. Some of the arguments to be made for it were contemplated and proposed by various rowing clubs. I think one rowing club in particular, just east of Cessory Bridge, because the high speed there causes some issues with rowers not only getting in and out of their boats, but also operating in the area. And then there was also some proposal about the fact that when you approach Cessory from the west or the southwest, there's a blind spot there. And I took a boat out, and there is a blind spot around that area. And it's a little bit more hazardous to navigate under Cessory than is University. But in any event, some of the arguments against were there's never been a speed restriction there. There has been speed restrictions at other bridge, but Cessory and University were left off. There was also an argument that when you slow down there and then speed up, you're going to kind of, I don't know what the word is, but infill there, so you're going to have to dredge repeatedly because the start and stops of engines going to slow down for the speed restriction. So those arguments were all heard. Councilman Alfuraro, within his rights as introducer, withdrew the bill. Around that time, I joined Waterways. There was a handful of discussions around it early on in Waterways. And since that time, there has been an accident. And Commissioner Hartley just described that accident that happened, I believe you said, in August 2022, which feeds the... is kind of evidence backing up the blind spot issue related to this. So when that proposed legislation was withdrawn, one of the issues that came up in a waterways discussion was, well, can we explore non-regulatory signage? So my office and my executive council assistant, Amber in particular, started looking into non-regulatory signage. And Fish and Wildlife Commission does allow... non-regulatory signage upon their approval in certain places and given certain restrictions. And there are, you can choose from various non-regulatory signs, one of them being rowing ahead, rowers ahead or marina ahead. Those are two options. So we looked at that. We explored it. We didn't bring it up to Waterways Council until the February meeting, Waterways Commission. Why? Because we wanted to make sure we had all the approvals and rights to do so, and we were pretty close. We could put the... It'd probably be plus or minus a few months from being able to put the non-regulatory signage in. So we brought it up to Waterways Commission. And at that point, we also asked Captain Suber if there had been any accidents in the area. And it turns out there had been one report, the August report, since then. So Waterways Commission said, hey, there was almost a consensus among Waterways in the February meeting that non-regulatory signage is a great step, but why don't we revisit a speed restriction given the accident? And we don't have to go as broad as the contemplated legislation had in the summer of 2022. Why don't we just do it around Cessory because of that blind spot? We immediately convened a subcommittee to review that, and that's why we're here today. So that's where we are. What is, I think, on the table right now for us to discuss is a handful of issues. Do we propose speed restrictions there? If we do, is it how does that look? Is it just on either side of Cessory Bridge, which we as a municipality have the rights to do, given the way the state has allocated allowed the cities to govern, self-govern on some of their waterways. And then if we do that around Cessory, do we also combine it with non-regulatory signage? So that, I think, is a discussion. Do something. If so, what and how much for this meeting?
Thank you, Councilman. Any questions or discussion from our panel?
I'd be interested to see what Councilmember Morgan thinks of the situation.
Thank you so much. I think Mr. Howland said everything that I was thinking of saying, and it's because I believe that he and I had the same feeling when the first bill was withdrawn. We didn't necessarily want to see it withdrawn. We really wanted to see it worked out. And so we're just happy to be back at this position so that we can work it out. We don't want to just leave it hanging in the air on this waterway. It just makes no sense to leave it hanging. So we want to close this. We want to make sure that there is some kind of consensus on around what we're going to do as a community, as the community working with your elected officials to get this done. So thank you all for being here. Thank everyone for coming today for this. And we hope to reach a conclusion today that's going to be amicable to everyone.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Any other comments?
One thing I think that we'd benefit from is Mr. Burkett could talk about how the state does allow municipalities to impose speed restrictions within certain conditions.
Sure. Good afternoon. Brian Burkett. So there is a Florida statute, and I believe it's listed here. It's section 327.46, subset 1B2. So it allows local governments to establish a slow speed zone 300 feet on either side of a bridge, assuming the bridge is the vertical span is less than 25 feet. I'm sorry, the vertical clearance is less than 25 feet, and the horizontal clearance is less than 100 feet. So, So this bridge does qualify, or actually both bridges in this area do qualify for that allowance. So what this would provide, you know, the steps would be, since that's been, that option's been given to the local governments, they can, with a resolution support from the city council, if that gets passed, then we would attach that approved legislation to a permit application that would actually go to the different permitting agencies such as FWC, DEP, the Coast Guard, and the Army Corps. They're all involved in any kind of signage that gets put out on our waterways. So that legislation attached to that application would allow us to then move forward with the installation of the signage. So anything outside of those boundaries, so if we wanted to go beyond 300 feet, that would require a whole separate process. That FWC has a whole process that would involve a lengthy application and review by their staff in Tallahassee. And there's certain criteria that qualifies and certain criteria that does not qualify. But certainly the 300-foot zone on either side of the bridge is standard statewide. So we've done that locally, Shad Creek. Over off Hexer Drive is one example we did a couple years ago. So we've done the process. It works, and it's pretty streamlined. Once if the council approves the legislation, then it's just a matter of months to go through the permitting application and then installation.
Can you talk a little bit about the Shad Creek example? How many years ago was it? What was the problem that was going on that needed to be addressed for the speed?
Shad Creek was 2019. So 2019, Shad Creek is right there off the St. John's River, just west of Huguenot Park. It's a kind of a shortcut route to get up to the Fort George Inlet area. So years ago when that bridge was replaced, it was replaced with a higher bridge, which led a lot more boat traffic go underneath. And the homeowners up and down that waterway were concerned with the speeds of the boats going by their docks, and we looked at different options, and they were mainly concerned about their damage to private property, their docks and their seawalls and their shorelines and people on the docks. But the rules for FWC clearly state that any slow speed zone have to be involved with a boating safety. Or there's other criteria such as wildlife, you know, manatee zones and that sort of thing. But property, personal property damage was not a qualifying factor. So while we looked at the options to have a longer zone, it was determined that it was pretty clear we weren't going to be able to have a longer zone in this area. So we looked at what options we could do, and that's when we decided to move forward with the 300-foot zone on either side of that bridge. And, again, that was legislation that was submitted to the public and legislation that went through city council. And when that was passed, it was attached to the permit application for the signage itself, and that was installed as soon as we got our permits. And so the same process would be in place here.
Do you remember if you installed it, was it installed with like a piling and a speed restriction sign on both sides of Shad River?
Correct, yeah. So 300 feet on either side of the outer edge of the bridge, there was a single pile with a single sign, actually a two-sided sign, one that says you're entering a speed restriction, and then the other face was saying you're exiting and you can resume safe speed. So that was about a $30,000 project to have those two piles, one on either side with the two-face signage.
That city cost, totally borne by the city?
It was, yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And It sounds high, but you know, you got to get a barge and you got to the equipment to drive a pile down. Piles are typically preferred over buoys because the maintenance is a lot less, so that's what we would recommend in this situation. We've had an engineer look at this back when the original legislation was proposed, to just so we can get a number on it. And they had a mixture of buoys and piles, but we can work through that design element. And if that's something what we want to talk about, we can certainly talk about details of the design. But because of the configuration, and there's kind of an island in between there, we may need more than just one on either side. But we can, you know, we can talk over those issues if you want. To effectively sign this, we may want, it may be a four or more, but again, that can be something we can discuss as far as the design of how it will be signed. But it would still be 300 feet on either side of the bridge.
You looked at it last summer for placement. Yes. And
we got a quote when it was first introduced, the initial time.
The whole wedge,
yeah, yeah. From from Cesare all the way just past University, including that little wedge piece in the middle. So that project was about $50,000 at that point.
Oh, so we'd be less than that with just Cesare. I mean, not much, but...
But not with inflation.
Not with 8% inflation per year. Since
yeah.
It'll probably be similar, because even though the size of the area shrunk, the number of signs are still the same. You're just where you're drawing the line. So it's kind of a similar amount of signage in the waterways. So I would anticipate it would be a similar cost, even though if we reduced by a sign or two, the big cost is the mobilization of getting a barge out there with the equipment. So an extra pile here or there is going to be, you know, fairly minimal.
Once you got the barge out there.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
All right. That's, and actually then I'm going to ask Ms. Lehman, you think that we have a funding source identified for that?
We do, sir.
Potentially.
According to the auditors, we do have $65,000 in this particular fine fund that Brian has pointed towards. We just need to secure that.
Okay. So funding might not be an obstacle if we need to put speed restriction on accessory.
As of today.
Someone else may grab that beforehand.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Not on my watch.
No, we need the auditors down here.
Yeah.
This was as of this morning.
They are listening?
No, they're not listening, but this was as of this morning.
Okay.
Did tell me that the $65,000 was available. Confirmed.
And the legislation, if we propose it, could specifically draw that money from a fund to this.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. That's all the questions I had. I mean, discussion among the subcommittee, I guess.
Any other discussion?
No matter what happens today, I would like to make sure that we go through with the bare minimum that we were talking about already, the caution signs on, what would that be, University and probably Atlantic Boulevard?
Yeah.
The warning that there's, you know, the rowboat clubs up ahead?
Yeah, yeah.
No matter what, I think that would be a minimum.
And which we'd have to find additional funding for that. I don't think we've determined exactly where. When we're looking at regulatory signage, we proposed to Fish and Wildlife two or three locations, right?
Exactly. That I did it already for.
Yeah.
Excuse me. So these are the exact signs that I've already submitted to the FDEP for the non-regulatory signs. At the time when we were discussing non-regulatory, we were actually going to put these in the water. When we discussed amongst Brian and Councilman Hallam, we then decided that the bridges would be more appropriate, so now we do have to talk with FDOT and get their approval. But these are the signs, the non-regulatory signs that we would put on the bridges.
The non-regulatory signs being the caution, rowboats ahead.
Yes, the caution. Rowboats ahead as well as the caution, you are responsible for your own weight.
Neither of which are enforceable.
They're non-regulatory. These are the ones that were recommended by the FWC when we originally talked about the non-regulatory signs.
And that would be University Boulevard and Atlantic Boulevard.
Is what was talked about.
Yeah.
Any discussion on what I had recommended at the last meeting about one way on the bridge.
Oh, we haven't discussed that since, but that's something we can definitely look at.
Because that's what we're trying to avoid is the, I mean, not to downplay the injury from the motorboat, and but we're talking about the rowers coming off the dock on the, what would that be, the north shoreline, so keeping the boaters on the southern shoreline by regulating which pilings to go through. Heading east. The motorboaters heading east, having arrows saying this is the pilings you're supposed to go through. So that way the rowers would know there's not going to be a surprise boater coming through.
Well, we wanted to mark the channel, clearly mark the channel under the bridge so that hopefully boaters would use the main channel and not swing wide up against the
docks. That's what I'm getting at.
Actually, and I don't recall the bridge exactly. Captain Suber might. Are there two?
There's three.
Okay. Three ways to go. Are all three navigable? And
there is a marked channel that we put in. It's there now.
And does that take you closest to the dock? The north bank.
It's part of the river.
The north bank.
Yeah, because we dredged it.
Oh yeah.
And one of the things that's good in theory, but the reality of it is the whole waterway is equal for any type of vessel.
Right.
Whether you're a paddle boat, a sailboat, or a power boat, there's regulations that fall within all three of them that, you know, you can go anywhere on that waterway as long as you're abiding by the regulatory aspects of it, which means if you try to regulate to where all power boats have to go this way and paddle boats get to go this way, you're opening up a big, gigantic can of worms.
Yeah. We're not.
No, not that at all.
Oh, okay.
Not that at all.
Sorry.
All boats would go through a certain, you know, there, and it's just.
We'd have a sign that would say channel.
Well, we could always.
Over,
as far as bridges aren't marked.
Right, but each side could be marked with channel here and channel here, so the boat traffic would stay there.
The channel's marked with green and red buoys.
Right, but they're hard to see.
Do those green and red buoys put you.
Basically, I'm trying to avoid a collision, is what I'm getting at.
I understand.
So if there's a one way at a certain bridge, I've never seen it, I don't think. I don't know why it couldn't happen, though, is what I'm getting at. One way this way, one way that way, through the bridge. That way there's no confusion.
An eastbound...
Sounds too simple to me.
Eastbound lane and a westbound lane, you can't enforce it. But if it were marked on the eastbound side, and it said channel, and on the west side, coming the other way, it said channel on the next opening over, then it would at least encourage people to stay to the right on either side.
I would caution against scope creep.
Channel is one set of.
Pardon me?
I see this as scope creep.
The channel is between one set of piers, though. You don't have a pier in the middle to make them go to one side or the other.
Yeah.
And so, and boaters are regulatory. They know what they're doing. They know that if they're going one direction, then they usually use the right side of the right side of the channel, unless there's circumstances that doesn't allow it.
Yeah. Okay.
So, it's what I'm concerned about is in over regulating and over signing.
Okay.
And we really can get confusing.
Let's get what we can get without overdoing it.
Okay. Right.
Yeah, we can't change the channel that's outside of our scope. That's outside of regulatory, our local limitations anyways, right? But what we could do, if I think you indicated that there are three permissible underpasses on Sesri, where they're all navigable waters, but maybe you said there's not. There's
I didn't say they were navigable.
Oh, okay, good, okay. So there's one navigable pass, and that's the current channel. That's the northernmost underpass in the bridge, and that's marked by red and green.
You're correct on three.
There's three navigable passes.
There are, okay, but one is marked by red and green buoys.
There's about a half a dozen, and unless you know, you don't know which three they are, but you can guess who the three more to the middle.
Yeah.
The only reason you can tell now is because there's a sign up currently, workers ahead, but the workers are actually right underneath.
Okay, so I think we should probably, my thinking is that we stay away from that one, but I mean, it's up to the subcommittee. That said, if there's conditions that it may not be marked well, the way we place pilings to and from on 300 feet may mark it fine. And you're right, when they go under a certain overpass, boaters should know the rules of the road, stay in the right. Okay.
You're making an extremely major impact by just putting the 300 feet on each side of the bridge.
Please explain.
Well, the boaters, they're going slow, number one. Number two is that even a boat, if you have an arrow saying that the channel is over here, there's no regulation or nothing that says a boat can't go right across that if he's going slow or she's going slow. So that signage like that, it means nothing. The 300 feet on each side of the bridge slows vessels down, and they have, and that makes them where they can see what's going on better. And even if they, like in that situation of that crash that, or that incident that occurred with a tuber, or that was pure
carelessness.
Right.
I mean, you're right.
There's no regulation in the world that eliminates some of that.
Yeah, by marking the channel like that, it may actually cause more confusion.
Did I miss the news that even happened?
It happened.
August
22nd. We'll wait for comments.
Did I miss the news?
Yeah.
Because I live on there and I didn't see it.
Any other comments among the subcommittee on this? Then I think we do need to. Yeah.
Okay, I'm just going to, on that same about for direction, that would be in lieu of or instead of the speed zone. If we have a speed zone, there's no need to put that.
Oh, I see.
There's no need for that.
I mean,
you're going 5 miles an hour, you don't need to. Have it directed.
I see, okay.
But in lieu of it, with just the signage and the warnings, to have an arrow saying that way it keeps them over. So the rowers would have 50 yards or whatever the actual measurements are of clear space.
Got it.
That's what I was going after.
Got it. No, you're trying to minimize regulations, so it makes sense.
That's how I was looking at it.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Hmm. I guess what we need to do is determine if there's, I think what we should do is definitely take public comments before we vote on something.
I agree. But
we should determine what are we thinking right now? Are we thinking that it's the answer is speed restriction around Cessory and Cessory only?
Yes.
And that's all.
And nothing further.
Nothing else. And I'll remind everybody that what got the legislation really balled up last time was that we extended it to university.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that created a far greater amount of resistance.
Yeah.
I think there's a clear case for a safety issue here. Mm-hmm. Let's just leave it here. And, I mean, this is really what was requested by the proponent of the project.
That's right. And the water is clearly broader under university and approaching university. Right.
It's a straighter throughfare. You're not making a turn at the same time you're going under a bridge.
Yeah.
So, let's just stick with that.
And with dangerous waters, because that island definitely would seem to indicate to me that.
Oh, it's shallow. It's shoaly. Yeah.
Yeah. What about, if we're agreed on the 300 feet either side or proposing that as legislation for full waterways approval and then go through the normal council process. What about the non-regulatory signs? Do you still think it's worth pursuing that as you approach university and as you from the southwest and as you approach Arlington from the east, Atlantic Boulevard from the east?
I have no objections to that.
I think any warning is a good warning.
Yeah.
brings attention to whoever's new out there.
Yeah.
Captain Suber, how do you feel about it?
That's not a problem except, everything you put in the water becomes a hazard. It's an obstacle.
Ah.
So if we put them on the bridges and that type
less
of stuff,
less of a hazard.
Then all it is an advisory type sign. I was telling Brian, it'd be good with the rowing clubs when they're doing their training, especially with the children. Those signs are not regulatory or not absolute. They're advisory, and that doesn't mean that total safety is for them because the signs are there. As they do that in their curriculum, I think, is already they talk about regulatory signs and all. So that would be an important component of this solution.
And it is interesting that if there would be a caution rowboats ahead sign mounted to the university bridge as you're going into Arlington River,
mm-hmm.
You've already probably passed a bunch of rowers. Because they're operating over between Exchange Island and the mainland,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah. but still, where they're probably where it's tightest and where they're donning and doffing, well, they're getting on their boats and getting off their boats is there. So it's probably still worthwhile having the rowboats.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. Okay. On the other hand, when you're coming from Atlantic, you probably have not encountered rowers yet, but you will see the Episcopal, then the First Coast, and the Jacksonville Rowing Club. So, yeah, it's probably then to avoid keeping another sinking, another piling in the middle of the river, which becomes an obstruction to boating. You could put them on those.
Put it on the bridge.
Put them on the bridges.
They need to be on the bridges.
Any more pilings?
Yeah.
Put it on the bridge.
Please no more pilings.
Yeah.
One less thing to maintain. One less thing to hit.
Right, exactly.
You just got to ask permission from DOT. But other than that headache, I think it would, fiscally, too, it probably makes more sense to put it on the bridge.
Yep.
The bridge is going to stay there.
Yeah, exactly.
Piling might not.
We hope the bridge is not moving.
Yeah.
Are there any, being unfamiliar with those waters, any existing pilings that would be plus or minus 300 feet from Sestri that you could leverage for this, or are they all going to be new pilings sunk?
Oh, there's some pilings up at the mouth of the approach to the Arlington River from the St. John's River that are Manatee Zone, sort of safety zone regulatory signs.
That's at the mouth of Arlington? Way yeah, because that's a speed restriction right there for 100 yards due to manatees,
no,
right?
Way more than 100 yards.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I know that.
I
think what we have to do is then.
I'm just going to answer your question because I'm on there hours a day, every day.
We live there.
Yeah, there's no pilings.
In the area that we're talking about. Yeah. I wouldn't expect there to be.
Just on the quick topic of channel markers, that one channel marker has been missing for months. Someone ran over it, must have been a propeller that ate it up. So there actually isn't a channel marker at the moment. It hasn't been for several months.
East of the Sestri, it's torn up.
We can fix that.
Yeah. Without legislation.
Yeah, that's management. That's,
yeah.
We didn't know about it. So.
Okay.
That closes out number three, unless anyone has any further discussions. At this point, we should probably, Mr. Chair, open it to public comment, I guess. And I think we have a whole bunch of speaker cards, right?
Yeah.
Councilwoman Howland.
Seven cards, 3 minutes. Yeah, and if there's anyone who, since that discussion, didn't put in a speaker card, if you want to put in a speaker card, you can.
Councilwoman Howland, may I just make a quick comment? Just asking that everyone please be respectful of one another. We have the sweet lady here that's trying to take minutes of this meeting. It's been properly noticed. Everyone wants to hear what you have to say, but it's hard if we're talking over each other, so I just ask you to please be respectful.
Thank you. One call.
Sir.
Mr. Bales.
Yep. Mr. Bales.
There's a mic there. Sir, you can come up there.
3 minutes.
3 minute timer going, and would you mind warning him when he's got like 30 seconds left?
Okay.
Oh, yeah, please, all speakers, just say your name and address.
My name is Davis Bales, 6457 Boulevard. I'm the director of the First Coast Rowing Club. I think everything I have to say has been said. I just want to thank you all for keeping this alive and keeping boaters, rowers, kayakers, and everybody else alive.
Thank you.
Thank you. Lisa Almeida.
Name, address, and the business you run, please.
Okay. Lisa Almeida, 310 Tuckerton Lane, Jacksonville, Florida. And I'm here as Lisa Almeida, but I do own the Freedom Club. And we're very focused on safety. So this is a hard thing for me, and I would not want to be in your shoes at all. Having listened to everything, what I think that it's a shame that the person who got hurt with the tubing accident got hurt. However, I believe that that was probably incredible negligence. And I don't feel like we can govern every single thing. We don't have stoplights at every traffic light. There's traffic lights, there's areas of traffic that aren't governed. And I don't know that that's our responsibility. And I feel like this is just one special interest group that their dock happens to be right there and it creates a problem for them. Rather than them looking for creative solutions, we as the people who live there, vote there 24/7, have to suffer with the outcome. And when I say suffer, here's what I'm talking about. I love you, Jim, and that dredging, it didn't work. Sunday, I had the Boats Group, Boats.com here, Boat Trader, doing a video. 12 people, we were videotaping all day at Exchange Island. It's going to be great for Jacksonville and for Freedom Club. And I'm on my way back in. I'm in 1.8 feet of water, kicking up mud in my boat at the mouth of the Arlington River. The dredging didn't work. If you have this float zone, that is going to get silted up. Who is going to dredge it properly so that it stays, so that boaters don't have to worry about their engines getting mucked up? The second question that I would ask is, do you all just get to make this, like, is this different than when you have to do a zoning hearing and hear all the residents, or do you just get to make the decision? Because this is during the day, and there are all of us that live on the creek here. There's a lot of people that live on that creek and use that boating that aren't here getting to put their voice. And I think that it's really important for them. And the last thing that I want to say is, if we're doing it just because of the school, why can't it be like a school zone? Because now you're going to make that no wake, 24/7. They're only there a few hours a day, or a few hours a week. They're not there 24/7. Why do I have to slow down when they're not there? Why can't it be like a school zone during certain hours when they're on the water? Now, I know that doesn't exist anywhere, but why can't we brainstorm and get creative and do something like that? I certainly would feel a lot better about it. And then lastly, for me personally, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to leave my dog with my big boat. I'm not going to get up on plane now for just however many feet it is to get to the slow zone. So I'm going to have to go no wake for my dog all the way through the slow zone to the other area. Then I'll get back up on plane for a little bit and go to the next slow zone. When I purchased my house, I bought my house there because there were no slow zones. And I could water ski, wakeboard, and take my kids out there. And I think that we're just trying to govern for the wrong reasons. We're trying to, you know, listen, we all shouldn't leave our house if we're afraid an accident's going to happen. I mean, things happen, and you have to put some responsibility on the keeper, people and the ownership of themselves to do the right thing. And I just feel like there's going to be too many downsides for all the people that live here, who bought property there, and it's not fair. And there's two other crew teams that haven't said one word. It's only one team that seems to be creating this objection. So, in closing, not for it.
Thank you. Mike Murphy.
Good afternoon. My name is Mike Murphy. My address is 1395. River Hills Court, and I've attended several Waterways Commission meetings regarding this, as well as some of the community meetings. And my objection had been the 24-hour-day, 7-day-a-week slow-speed restriction. I don't mind slowing down when they are there at their dock, but the 24-hour-day, I do object to that. I'd be curious how you're going to light these signs at night. I mean, are they just going to be piling out there with no lights and expect everybody to slow down? I wonder how much more cost that's going to be. As far as the 24-hour thing goes, and we don't slow down for school zones, 24 hours a day, and that's what you're asking everybody to do. We've heard about safety. The rowers, I don't even know if they carry life jackets in those boats. There was a tragic accident in the Orlando area last August where one of the rowers, a youth rower, fell out of one of the boats and drowned. So you can only assume that that individual did not have a life jacket on. So they purchased this property. They knew the conditions there. And now here they are today requesting this. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Mr. Murphy. Donnie
Alton.
Okay.
Good afternoon. My name's Donnie Alton. I'm 48 Bay Ridge Road. I've been on Plattsburgh Creek since 95, skied on it for 5 years before that. So I'm representing Colonial Park, which our whole neighborhood is Plattsburgh Creek, from Beach Boulevard all the way to Atlantic Boulevard. So I know a bunch of people here that's put in here, so I'm against it because I've seen the creep for 25, 30 years for the people buy houses to be on the creek to be able to ski. And if that slows down, I know right now it's becoming so silted up that it's really ridiculous. So I'm against it.
Okay. Thank you. Joe Lawton.
Joe Lawton, I live on Campbell Avenue, and that's I live on the creek, so I move nearly every day. I see the guys rowing. I'm respectful of them. Sometimes in the no-wake zone, they even come through with their little boats, their little throws as big a wake as any other boat. So they don't always respect it either. But I think it's a little silly to have one group of people try and govern it for everybody. And on the dredging side, I was curious who's going to pay for it next time it needs to be dredged.
Fiscal.
Thank you very much. I wish I was good at this. Is it Ozzy?
Ozzy? If they had the time or the energy, because it is exhausting. Every single person on the commission has at one point said this is a safety issue. So on record, you guys have admitted that this is a safety problem. The rowing club has brought about this to everyone's attention. It's not about the rowers, because thankfully there has never been an accident with the rower. But there has been an accident with jet skis. There has been an accident with boaters. There are fishermen out there on Sundays, but there are no rowers. There are kayakers out there any time of the day. This is not about the rowers. First Coast Rowing Club brought this to your attention because we see it, because our dock is right there. It is not about the rowers' safety alone. This is a public safety issue. And we don't have signs at every single street light, but we have signs and we have seatbelt laws because you can't rely on common sense, clearly. And so if every single person has at some point through the last year at every meeting said this needs to be done, it is your responsibility for public safety to allow this to move forward. It's not about property values. It's about public safety and keeping the waterways safe for everyone. That's all I have.
Thank you. Travis Slaughter.
Yes, sir.
After he's done, I noted some questions I could ask.
Questions.
Travis Slaughter, 322 Spring Forest Avenue. I actually live on Springfield, on Pottsburg Creek, unlike several of these people. We all pay taxes. Some people are tax exempt. You're bringing up Shad Creek. That thing used to be that wide. Those people on that creek, they complained because they were never set up to half docks, boat traffic, any of that. Then they opened it up and they got boat traffic. Jim will tell you. Also, we've already got laws in place. No wakes on when you pass a unpowered vehicle or vessel, it's a no-wake zone, correct? So you're governing on top of governing. You get where I'm coming from? I mean, it's over and over. But we see it. You see it for a few hours. We live it every day. Every day we're out there. And we've already got that. They can go right to where it's a no-wake zone from right under University Boulevard and row straight out. But they don't want to do that because it's rough. They want to come back in the creek and start governing where we live. You know, we live all along Pottsburg. We've lived there. I grew up there. I've been there. My kids have been there. And they want to take that away from us and have us start slowing down number one accident. And then, of course, they're playing on safety issues. That's safety, 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 safety. I don't see you doing it to other bridges. Yeah, I don't see you doing it anywhere else, but they want to do it here where Episcopal is. Because Episcopal raised, you know, they keep screaming. And then also, this meeting today at 3:30, that's kind of, you know, the last one we had was at evening, and a ton of people showed up against it. Now they moved to 3:30 when people are working to do it again. You know, what's it going to be at noon next time where less people can come and less people can come until they finally, you know, until it gets passed, or how does that work? And also what's funny too, y'all already put forth the effort to start looking into signs and putting time and money of taxpayer dollars to start seeing how much signs cost before you even pass it or not. That just, I don't understand that portion of it. You think you pass it, then start getting how much it costs and everything else, but y'all already put the cart before the horse. It just, I don't, you know, I'm new to this government and all this, but it just, I don't understand this one iota. You know, like Jim touched earlier, the over-government, more government. We've already got laws in place. When you pass a road, you have to, it's a no-bake zone. It's a no-bake zone in front of a road. Am I correct, Jim? An unpowered vessel.
You're responsible for your wake by law.
Sir,
you're responsible for your wake by law, yes.
So when you pass a rower, it's a no-wake zone, correct?
I don't remember that in rules.
Well, that's not exactly true. It's just anybody is responsible for their wake.
Right.
If you cause damage or injury because of your wake, that is a violation and that can be regulated.
So when you pass these rowers, you're already supposed to slow down. You know, That's what you're up against anyways. You're just throwing more laws on top of more laws that we already have.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for your time. And fully against it.
What were our next steps? And I think there was a couple questions that came up during the public comment. One was related to process. The process here is no different than it was with the legislation that got withdrawn. Whatever is voted on here, if anything's voted on, this is a subcommittee. It'll be passed to the full Waterways Commission, who will then determine if they want to recommend it to City Council for approval. If it gets recommended to City Council, legislation will be drawn up. It'll end up going through two committees, probably neighborhoods and transportation or something. Mm-hmm. And then it'll go to City Council. So you'll get the opportunity to do public comment on the next Waterways meeting, which will be March 22nd, and then two different committee meetings, and then City Council, all at various times a day, allowing for folks before or after work. So that's one thing. Second is, are there any places, Mr. Burkett or Captain Suber, where there are actually speed restrictions by time? Is that allowed under?
Well,
sorry, we are trying to record this meeting. Thank you.
We don't have any in Duval County. There are like some Manatee restrictions that are dated. But not timed.
Oh, okay. Speed restrictions during November to April or something like
right.
that?
Right.
Okay.
And in this situation, you're requesting a bridge exemption under the bridge rule.
Yeah.
And so the bridge is always there. So
right.
You can't do a time because of the reason that you're doing it.
We have one. It's the Hart Bridge through downtown area when they put the yellow light on.
Yeah, but that's not a constant daily time. That's when the lights are regulated. That's not a specific time.
When there's exit or something's going on downtown, usually like the
right.
Jack game. Yes, sir. Jim's correct on that.
Yes. Excuse me. The Atlantic Boulevard Bridge is already regulated by City of Jacksonville slow speed zone. There are signs posted there with city ordinance.
Yeah, but not by time.
Okay.
Next question. A question came up about does it light up at night? Do any of our speed restrictions under any bridges anywhere light?
We do have some lighted signage at Hart Bridge, Main Street Bridge. This particular type of bridge, this regulatory sign here would be a sign on a piling with reflective materials, not a light.
Which is very common.
Right.
Okay.
That's what Shad has. That's what we have at Julenton Creek at over Interstate Road 13.
Okay.
It's just signage with reflective lighting.
Thank you, sir. And then another question. Who pays for dredging when dredging does occur? Is it either fined or state or the city?
It could go I'll let Brian answer that because there's
under fine we do dredging.
The better question is how do we get it done how does it happen?
Please. Mr. Burkett.
Right, so we dredged this project, as you know, it's been, 8 years maybe? And that was using a fine grant, so it was 50% city dollars and then 50% reimbursed from fine. From our records, that was the one and only time this water body has ever been dredged, and there was a lot of question and apprehension going into it, how long it would last. And so, of course, the dredger's not going to give you any kind of guarantees, so... but we did move forward with the project because we thought it was a worthwhile project and there was a need there.
How much was it?
I don't know the number off the top of my head, but gosh.
2.0 feet that was coming back at low tide.
Yeah.
So how many millions?
But it was, we followed the design that was permittable by the regulatory agencies, DEP and Army Corps. So the project was done per the specs of the project. Because it only lasted a handful of years, it's unlikely that fine would support another dredge there unless there was additional design recommendations that may find a solution to increasing its longevity. It's something that could be looked into, but just throwing that caveat out, fine does not fund maintenance dredging. They will do once in 25 years kind of dredging, but they won't come back in every few years and clean up your waterways for you. So if not, it would be 100% on the city.
Captain Super.
Can I ask a question about
No,
the
please. The That was what the public comment is for. I mean, we could have subject to the chair if you wanted to have public comment.
Let's hear what Captain...
I just want to ask a question about the type of dredging.
Let's
go here first.
Okay, the dredging occurred, I don't know what year, but we're getting close. I think fine used to have a rule now. They changed, so this may not be in effect now, but it used to be a 10-year requirement for they wouldn't touch it again. I don't know where they are or where we are at that point. But when we did that dredge, and I'm not sure, is the whole dredging project silted in, or are we talking about the mouth?
The mouth.
That's what I thought. The mouth of Arlington River going in from the St. John's River it turned out to be a complication of the dredge project because they hit a hard pan that was right there in that area, and they tore up a whole dredge machine when they hit it, and they had to reevaluate and do a reconfigure what type of equipment they were using. So whether it got low enough has always been a question. It got lower. But another thing that causes that is the St. John's River is flowing north and south at a average 1 to 3 knot pace, and then you got the Arlington River. Anytime you have a separation or a difference of velocity of the waterway, the silt and everything that's in that waterway is going to settle at a point where it slows down. And so anytime you have a mouth of a waterway like that, it is a continuous issue. It's not unusual. It is a fact. They're absolutely correct that it's not what it was. Mm-hmm. Whether it was as bad as it was when we started, I don't know. That would be opinion.
Thank you, sir. So, Captain, we have so many bridges that are like Cessory across waterways all over Jacksonville, and we've had the state law allowing the locality to put speed restrictions in bridges that meet certain minimum and maximum heights, and there are many around the city. Have we, and one of the reasons the city can choose to do so is if there's a blind spot or hazards in navigation or safety, primarily for safety issues, which is what we're looking at here. Have there been any situations where there's other bridges like this that when speed restriction has been put in that it's caused a future hazard issue that resulted in further dredging? Like, is that happening at Shad? Could we potentially be replacing one, trying to solve one safety issue and creating another down the road?
Well, I don't think so. I don't think that's going to be an issue. If it silts up, it won't be because boats aren't going, because boats are still going to be going through there, and they're actually, when they're down in the water, they're deeper going through there anyway, so that comes into play. We have bridges a lot of our bridges have slow speed zones. Ortega River Bridge, Julington Creek Bridge at State Road 13, Shad, Hexer Drive. We got several. The one at by Palms Fish Camp, we just put one. Did we put that in? I know that's another topic of discussion. But, you know, and then there's some theory that there's some people that think that every bridge should have a 300-foot safety zone if it falls into the category that FWC allows. Yep. Right or wrong, it's an opinion, but we do have some that are in effect now that stay deep all the time. So that question.
Okay. If you want, if people want to speak again, you can open public comment, limit it to a minute or something, and people just have to feel
like we can do that. We can do that. It's open again for public comment. Anyone want to speak for a minute?
You can just fill out another speaker card, and then we'll open it up again, because it seems that's okay to do, right?
They've already had their speaker card, but they just have to come up and declare themselves in the microphone. It can't be raising hands and speaking from your seat. You'd have to come up here again.
For a minute. We've got to get you on camera.
I just have a clarifying question.
Okay, come up here, please.
It's not about that. So I remember, Jim, that something weird happened with the dredging of the Arlington. So you think that it was that they didn't go, they weren't able to go deep enough that time, and that's why, it literally is back to where it was.
Right.
And it's just in that slow zone area. Once you get on the other side of it, once you get, I got to like 4.5 feet. So it's definitely because of the slowing, but you think it's because they hit that hard and they couldn't get deep enough.
Right, I think that's a part of the problem. And then when you have a obstacle in a hill like that, it's just going to acerbate. It's going to
gets worse.
Always build. So that's something we can look at. I'll ask Brian to see if there's a mechanism that we can look for to revisit that issue there. Because
I just wanted to clarify since we could. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
She's not the first one that's upset about that.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, please say your name and address again. Thank you.
Davis Bales. I just want to respond to a couple of things just to clarify. One, we are not trying to regulate the whole river. We're talking about Sesame Bridge. We're not trying to tell people what to do further up the creek. We're not we have nothing to do with this silt issue that's where the mouth of the river is. So I just want to make that part clear that. And yes, we are the ones who brought this to attention. I spoke with the founders of the club, who founded the club in 1990, who said, yes, this is a problem. And I wondered, why didn't they do something about this before? And they said, government, it's just too much of a headache. You're gonna hang yourself if you keep trying this. And I just decided not to give up. So it's not that this is a special interest group. You all live on the river. And I'm only there a few hours, like half a day, but I'm right at that bridge. And we had a neighbor who's come quite a bit, Daniel Berman, who is the next property over. We just see it. That's all. We're the ones who see it. So when someone says, I didn't see the accident, so therefore it didn't happen, that doesn't matter if you don't see it. We just saw what we saw. I saw it as a danger to all, and so I pressed the issue. This isn't just about us.
Thank you, sir.
Thankfully, nobody's children have been hurt yet. That's all.
Thank you, sir. Which does bring up a good point, and that is, okay, 1 minute here. We're going to get into it. 1 minute, sir, please. We'll set the time.
Travis Slaughter, 322 Springforce Avenue. He says he sees it all the time. No video, no pictures. I don't even see the accident that happened in August that he's talking about where the inner tube were hit. What, do you got one? I mean, that's even if it's one. So we're going to change the whole creek for a guy that's out there just and how you're teaching rowing to high school kids and you're out there half the day. I guess they're not educated half the other half of the day. But, you know, he's trying to change everything because he sees all these accidents. Just take a picture. More than one. He sees it all day long. You know, every day, all day. People work. Most of that creek is all construction work. That's just like today. That's the reason half the people aren't even here today because we did it at 3:30 in the afternoon. Most of the time when you do it after 5 or 6, a bunch of people will show up. But it's ridiculous to over-govern this over one accident. Accidents happen all over.
I mean, so we're supposed to, like Lisa touched on, we're supposed to change it and not leave the house because of this. But it's just funny. There's one accident, but he sees it all the time. No video, no pictures, no nothing. That's it.
Thank you.
Fully against it.
Well, just before I turn over the chair to see if there's, if you want to ask for a motion, but the just to take a step back, we've gotten in the details here. One of the reasons we brought this back and the subcommittee was formed was last summer. It was the full wedge of speed restriction. That was withdrawn because of pushback. Now, with an accident, with the acknowledgement that the state law does exist to allow localities to choose a speed restriction when there's a safety issue or a blind corner, and that we've had an accident, now we're not proposing the full wedge. We're proposing just a slice, a compromise on Cessory Bridge, which we think, as a body, could increase significantly safety on that part of the Arlington River. That's why we're here. Just to share, I'm in favor of, would not have been in favor of the speed restriction that included the whole pie wedge. It's too restrictive. But given the information I know, I would be in favor of accessory speed restriction.
I would be in favor of it as well. The only problem that I see with it is I don't know how you do this, but the comments from the public about it not being 24 hours, it certainly makes sense. Is there a way to accomplish anything like that? Anybody? Yes.
I can. This is what I brought the very first time it came up, was to turn it into like a school zone where they actually had a button to press, blue light comes on, we're out. Just that simple. I'm heading east on Cessory. And it would be save us money. We wouldn't have to put it on pilings because you could put it literally on the bridge. Accessory. To me, it's a savings, and it's only done while they're there. But it sounds like we're not allowed to do it. So,
my thinking on that, too, is the reason we're putting this in is for boating safety. The blind corner, the accident, not the rowing club.
You keep saying it's a blind corner. Have you ever been out there?
I have.
There's no blind corner on Pottsburg.
I don't think University Bridge is a blind corner, but...
No, y'all keep saying it's a blind corner and all this stuff. And
you can't see what's behind it, which is...
What's behind what?
What's behind the bridge when you're coming around.
You can see clearly around that bridge. Jim will tell you that. You can see that bridge is spanned. You can see from one end to the other.
And there's hazard to navigation around there?
It's all marked.
Well, it all blends together. You've got... activity, you got a bridge, you got a curve that's happening. So when you look at all the big picture of it and all, then it does justify under the request that's being made because of the bridge. If you say it's because of the rowing club, then it's never going to happen because it's going to be denied.
Right.
And if you say times, it's going to be denied because it's got nothing to do with the rule that applies for bridges. And so you'd have to reevaluate your reasoning for doing this.
Yep.
It's just like Ortega. You talked about that. The last death I think we had was Ortega Bridge, right? And that has a no-wake zone and everything else, and that did zero good.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
So we're on next steps, which is if we choose to make a motion and pass it or not choose. And as far as being in our posture, the members of the subcommittee, Mr. Hartley, Mr. Devereaux, Mr. Fraden, can make the motion and approve, right? Mr.
Hartley,
Hoyles.
Mr. Fraden, and Mr. Hoyles can all make the motion.
Hartley, Devereaux, Hartley, well, Fraden, and Hoyles. But Hoyles is actually ex officio.
I understand, so he doesn't vote as a member of the commission, but he can as a member of the subcommittee.
So then... I see. All right. There we go. Good.
Congratulations. I've been promoted.
I'm going to move that we move forward with establishing a no-wake zone 300 feet either side of the Cessory Boulevard Bridge.
Second that.
Any discussion on the motion?
I don't think it's necessary. I think we've discussed it to death.
And the three voting members are Mr. Hartley, Mr. Fraden, and Mr. Hoyles.
That's correct. All those in favor?
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion passes. We will forward this to the Waterways Commission for their next meeting.
And that would be March 22nd, 9 a.m., I believe, in the council chambers.
And, thank you very much.
With that, we're adjourned. Huh?
We are adjourned.
All right.
Thank you, Councilwoman.
Thank you, guys.
Are you okay with that motion? Well, I guess
we're not supposed to talk about it. Over.
That's what
I did. Okay.